quella scienghetra mi scemo trebili so. Quella mia scienina qua scuria, ulevi sua garsi guaruli so, scienci zamta rizziga zapulia, scienci zamta rizziga zapulia. Ulevis wagar si guaruli so, shenshi zamtari zgazapulia, shenshi zamtari zgazapulia. Visar moki blau sheni vdats minda, tveli tbilisi sveli eri, tbilisi elivar, tbilisi gauchti, miyamage bavar bedini.
Nini Palavandishvili, welcome to Reimagining Soviet Georgia. Thank you for coming on today. How's it going?
Yeah, hello. Thank you for inviting. All good.
Okay, so tell us who you are. What do you do?
Well, I'm an art historian and I study art history in Tbilisi, Georgia, at the Art Academy, and then Berlin I studied social and economic communication. So I have two degrees, and then I somehow tried to combine these two. So basically I'm a curator for contemporary art projects with a focus on our urban space, living space, hence also my interest in architecture, and especially in the late modernist architecture and monumental part as a monumental art as an inseparable part of that period architecture.
Great. And so one of the topics I wanted to discuss today was, I know that you are overseeing and organizing an exhibition in Tbilisi on Lado Meskishvili. So who is he and what did he do?
Well, Lado Meskishvili is one of those prominent architects whose work left significant traces on Georgia and particularly on Tbilisi. So quite many buildings which we still have in Tbilisi are created by him. So we might not know, or the majority of the population might, of course, not know the names behind the buildings, and that's normal and okay. But while or when we start listing them, then everybody is amazed, like, wow, okay, this one, that one, okay, of course I know that one. Oh, this one as well. So like Tbilisi Sports Palace, Chess Palace and Alpine Club, Actors House, Telegraph Building, former garage of the Ministry of Council of Ministers, which is unfortunately demolished already. Two residential houses, the Agricultural Institute, metro station, former Lenin Square metro station, which is now Freedom Square underground station, then Memorial of Glory in Vaca Park. So these are just few objects that he has created, and this is definitely part of our everyday life. We are passing these buildings on everyday basis, so we all know these buildings.
And I guess, I'm not so architecturally inclined. So if you could just tell me, does Meskishvili have a specific style, or is there something about his approach to architecture that stands out compared to, say, other architects in his era?
Well, he is definitely representative of late modernism period, what we call so in Georgia, because I mean modernism as an architectural style, it started in Europe and then later in the United States, like from the 20s, like of the previous century. But historically in Soviet Union and in Soviet Georgia as well, so there was this break between 30s and mid 50s, where the Stalinist architecture was prevailing and dominating. So, and the Stalinist socialist in style and national in character, wait, socialist in style and nationalistic in character. So this was this prevailing and socialist classicism also, or Stalin empire style, what we call. So there are several names, but what I wanted to say that only after Stalin's death, when Khrushchev comes into power, there is this famous decree where he prohibits any decoration on the buildings. And this lays a foundation to absolutely new style in Soviet architecture. And Khrushchev was not that much interested in appearance of the buildings, but I mean, he was driven rather to build fast and cost effectively because there was shortage of living spaces. So with this decree, he wanted to push forward this rapid growth in living areas and so on. But on the other hand, this definitely laid a foundation to this late modernism architectural style, very proud representative of which is Lado Alexei-Mezhishvili. So his architectural works, we can basically trace this whole evolution of this period because he started working already in 40s. He studied in Georgia. This is also important. He belongs to a generation who started, who had his education in Georgia, because before that, still Georgian architects would be educated in Russia or also going to Germany or any other countries. And after Sovietization and founding architectural faculty, first at the Technical University and then at the Art Academy. So this is when Georgian architects get their education locally. And Lado Alexei-Mezhishvili belongs to that generation. And then after Second World War, he starts his professional career. And his very early works still belong to this Stalin period. And from this period, we have Sanatoria Imereti in Traubumbo still remaining. This is the only piece which still stands. And this is also very interesting object. We can observe how, I mean, in its appearance and scale, so it's fully representing all the stylistical features what this period bears. And right after that, so this Khrushchev decree comes out, and he also, of course, has to adapt to the new regulations and to the new requirements. And for me, this is very interesting to observe how he changes from one style to another. While, for example, still continuing using arches or domed construction, which is right after Sanatoria Imereti comes Tbilisi Sports Palace. Which we would not think that was created like 2-3 years later after this decree and right after Imereti. So because it is in its appearance, it's absolutely magnificent without any abundance, without any not necessary decoration, like very simple, but very sophisticated building, which is also important with its structural engineering. So, because when we look at the architecture, and especially of that period architecture, where the reinforced concrete comes to place, where new building materials come to play into place, where new findings, there are many searches, how to create this or that, element, and Tbilisi Sports Palace is definitely one of these magnificent pieces where a structural engineer, David Kajaya, together with the architects, found this way how to put a huge dome with precasted monolithic plates built on each other, like in rows, without any supporting material. So for that period, this is definitely an achievement and innovation.
Well, yeah, I was actually, I mean, I have a lot of questions, but one thing you brought up is this, there's obviously with architecture, a stylistic design component, and then of course, mixed with the actual infrastructure of the buildings. And so I'm curious, you know, about the specifics of building new modern buildings in an old city like Tbilisi, for example, that's undergoing kind of Soviet modernization process. And so how would an architect like Meskhishvili or maybe his contemporaries in the Soviet period interact with building new buildings in, say, areas with old buildings? Or how did they interact with this kind of old geography of a city like Tbilisi?
Especially Lado Alexey Meskhishvili and his buildings, it's very interesting, very good question, because he always takes into consideration the exact location where the new building has to be put. Of course, it is not always his decision, because there is a huge council of ministers behind, the government stands behind, this or that ministry, which is the commissioner stands behind. But from the archival documents we still can have look into, they reveal that there are discussions which place to, where to place this or that building. And of course there are arguments, pro and contra, but definitely what Lado Alexey Meskhishvili does, he takes into consideration the given location, and he tries to adjust and adapt to the given conditions. So not to adjust the location to the building, but respecting the nature, respecting the given conditions and adapting building to it. And for this, we have many examples, like also in Tbilisi, the Chess Palace and Alpine Club, also the Actors House, and many, many more. And also in case of Sports Palace, for example, there is this, the building is huge in its volume. It's huge, but you don't see it because it goes, the half of the building is underground. So it's basically like this, like egg, to imagine an egg which is halfway underground. So these are also these interesting findings, what architects find in order to give also account to the given environment, right? Yeah. And also we have to, definitely mention that Saburtalo and that location, where the Sports Palace stands, back then in the 50s, so when they started with the design and planning, it was still on the outskirts of Tbilisi. And with the telegraph also, we can, for example, say, because it still stands in the center of Tbilisi, it has to take into account neighboring building, which is also, of course, this Imeli, former Institute of Marxism and the Leninism, which is also a very important architectural piece in Tbilisi. So in this term, for example, he definitely takes into consideration the height of the building, of the neighboring building, and the material, the cladding material. So the yellow tufa with which is clad the building, he uses the same material on the telegraph building. So just to have this harmonic continuation of the line, of the street line.
I'm also curious, this dynamic of the decision-making that was happening, both in terms of the architecture of the building, in the vision of the architect, meaning how Meskhishvili imagined or believed that a certain building should look, whether it was in Tbilisi or in Tsaltubo, and then the decision-making, say, by the Council of Ministers or other bodies who have to kind of approve it. How did that process go? I guess the creativity of the architect versus the conditions in which the architect was actually able to sort of see their vision through? Like, what was that process like in the I guess post 1955, especially Soviet Georgia?
In many cases, it was quite a long process. So also this architecture, the archival documents and all these decrees for the building and this and that and agreements with chief architect of the city or the governmental bodies. This is a very long process. And in the exhibition, we also tried to show this process and show this creative process. I mean, not only bureaucratic and administrative process, but also creative process, because sometimes the initial design differs from the executed design. So there was this initial design, the product of the creative process, then there would be discussions, they would agree or disagree on some features or like technical requirements, or sometimes they argue on building materials, sometimes they argue on height or volume of the building, and then there is this process of reworking sometimes 3, 4, 5 times. So definitely it was very, very long process. So I would say like minimum 3 to 7 years it would take to start with the construction and finalizing the project. So it was not always, even for such architects as Vlado Alexey Mastrishvili, who was one of the star architects. So what we call now star architects. So for that Soviet period, he was definitely a star architect. So even he had to negotiate and prove his ideas, and definitely he had to also defend his ideas. So, and I guess from all the archival material we have, he was sometimes like really defending his point, so trying his best to argue and have enough arguments why this or that decision creative decision was made.
Yeah, I was particularly interested in this question because I feel like, you know, especially in the post-Soviet era, you kind of see how there's a certain chaos that goes into how buildings are built, where they're built, and for what purpose. And so I was just interested in thinking about this kind of more thoughtful, methodical, and kind of intentional engagement with the geography of the city that was going on, at least in this period when an architect sees what they're doing as, you know, not only something in service of the city and the urban dwellers, but also as like a kind of art, a piece of art and a creative process, you know, versus say, maybe, you know, in the period of fast money and markets, you have people kind of throwing buildings for as much profit as possible. And so I don't know, that comparison to me was kind of interesting.
Well, it is definitely very interesting, especially you also mentioned like this current rapid growth or like deliberate sometimes like placement of a building, because what I also see in Tbilisi that many buildings, they don't, for example, take into account the orientation to the sun, you know, like, okay, sometimes they have, they don't have enough window openings on the south or this or that. And with Soviet period architecture and with Vlado Alexey Mastrishvili legacy, we definitely see how delicately they choose how to orientate the building, right? So they exactly think where is north, where is south, where is a lot of sun, and how to place like sunscreens or to have like dead wall and this or that. So they take into firstly, of course, they take into account location of the building, then they take into account the function of the building, and then they take into account, of course, the usage, like the future usage. So how the future tenants of the building, be it residential or administrative, they would feel themselves in the building. So this is definitely what is very evident in all these decision makings about the creative process or for this or that building.
I'm also interested in, like, did he, I'm not sure actually if you mentioned this, but did he design anything or build anything outside of Soviet Georgia?
He mainly built everything in Georgia, but he had several exhibition pavilions outside of Georgia. He had one pavilion built in Izmir, Turkey, for World Expo. He had a pavilion built in Syria, in Damascus. And we also know that he had worked on a reconstruction of the Soviet pavilion in Leipzig. Unfortunately for that Leipzig project, we did not find any archival material. But there are a few archival images we have which show the object, but we don't have any plans, any written material about it. So yeah, just to answer your question about outside of Georgia.
Was that a sort of political decision to keep him mostly in Georgia? Or just by he chose himself?
This, unfortunately, I cannot answer with 100% assurance. So I don't really know. So mainly what I also know from my other project experience that Georgian architects, they worked in Georgia. There were very, very few architects who built outside of Georgia. So there were kind of collaborations within how you call them, like befriended countries, or so like the other socialist or like the third world countries, also Guinea or so on. But Lado Alex Mesrich really did not work on that project, I guess. Well, I definitely don't know the reason for this.
Yeah, because he also just seems he's designing and building everything in Georgia. I mean, he's a huge influence.
He was definitely a huge influence. And he was the leader of one of the architectural studios at Tbilisi Design Institute, Pilkala Projekti, which is a city architecture design institute. And there were several architectural studios, and he was the leader of one of them. So he was very important architect for that period. But nevertheless, we also have to give credit to other architects. I mean, he is definitely author of the many magnificent works we have, but there are many other architects. So there is, of course, Khalashvili, there is, of course, Ignadze, there is Chakhava, there is yeah, many other architects we still have and have to give credit to.
And was Meskishvili sort of like teaching these, like a school of architects? Was he influencing a whole sort of wave that came after him and took his style and built upon it? Or did he sort of stand out alone? Or did he, so I guess I'm asking, like, did he create a school of, was there a school of Soviet Georgian architecture that followed in his footsteps?
Well, he taught at first at Technical Institute, Tbilisi Technical Institute, which is the Technical University now. And later on, he was a professor at the Tbilisi Art Academy. And until his death, he was teaching there. And what is also very important to mention is that he in his architectural studio, he was taking, I guess, the brilliant students of his taking over. Like after they graduated, they would continue working at his architectural studio. So in different years, many also important, I mean, less or more important, but very interesting architects continued working at his studio. Some of them, very, very few of them, let me think. Well, no, unfortunately, all of them have passed away already, but until very recent, like three of them passed this or last year. So yeah, definitely he created kind of school of new generation of architects which followed his style or yeah.
Do you have a favorite building that he designed? And if so, why?
I definitely have. Actually, my encounter with Lado Aleksimeskis really started in 2014, 15, like consciously, but unconsciously, consciously started even before. There is this, there is the Tbilisi Chess Palace and Alpine Club in the very center of Tbilisi in Vera Park, which somehow always attracted my attention. And in 2014, 15, I started researching more about this building. And I dig more deeper and deeper. And then at some point I realized I wanted to make a project about this building. So this is when my real encounter starts with Lado Aleksimeskishvili. So back then it was just one building, which for me is, really amazing in its design and how the design features the function of the building. So first of all, it again, it stands in the very center of Tbilisi in not that big park, let's say. The volume of the building is huge, but you don't really feel it because it's distributed following the landscape of the park. So it the three floors, you don't really, they don't really strike you. So they are very harmoniously going or merging with the landscape. The building is also, we definitely keep in mind that building was dedicated to a female chess player, Nona Kaprindashvili, and female mountaineer, Alexandra Djaparidze, who in Djaparidze a little bit earlier and Nona Kaprindashvili in 60s, like became very important for Georgian, hence also Soviet sport. And there was this decision to build a bigger sports facility for these two sports arts. So he also has to follow the function. So because it was dedicated to chess playing. So there was, they decided to make this huge hall in the very center or the core of the building, and the rest facilities, they are arranged around the building. And every detail in this building, the arrangement of the galleries around, the decorative materials they use, which is a lot of wood and stone carving. Marquetry for the mobile panels, which separate galleries with the hall. So they all give indication or are inspired by chess and the Rocky Mountains, what we call, because marquetry, for example, this wood cutting artistic technology is not very popular in Georgia and has never been very popular in Georgia. But for me, this is the parallel to the chessboard, because chessboard is exactly like the small pieces. They are done by marquetry technology. So he uses this material, this technology in the design of the monumental building. Also the stone vitrage, which is on the facade, this depicts queen's crown, not the king's crown, but the queen's crown. So there are these very subtle indications to the function of the building. And then, of course, like architecturally, this very light architecture, huge ribbon windows, which follow on the full length of the building, which let in lots of light into the building. And like all this feature, I mean, this makes this building stand out, definitely. So yeah, this is one of my favorite buildings. It was until now, but after studying all his, like his oeuvre and like his legacy, well, it's very hard now to say this or that one is my favorite. There are many favorites, and all of them, they I can tell you the details which fascinate me about this building or what makes them stand out. So, and what we definitely, just to continue this, my thought is one of the aims or goals for me with this exhibition is, and with my research also in this exhibition, is not only to show the brilliance of his legacy, but also for future generation, for current and future generation to make them cherish this legacy, to make them aware of the importance of this legacy. So it's not the Soviet architecture which we have. So it was built, of course, in Soviet period, but then again, it goes hand in hand and parallel with the international developments in architecture. So we definitely, I would definitely argue calling it Soviet architecture. So this is international style, and he can proudly be presented along the international architects of that period. And we definitely have to be more cautious about the legacy which we have, not only Ladu Alexei Meskhishvili, I mean, with the whole Soviet period legacy we have in the country, and start to appreciate it more and, well, think not only twice, but maybe three or four times before taking a decision of demolishing this or that building.
I was going to ask something similar in the respect that when I've talked to other people who had Soviet education, they, you know, lament the fact that the education now is much worse and also just not as like rigorous. I would say, is there anything maybe you can offer about the level of training and education architects received, and if there's any differences into what's happening now?
Well, it's hard for me to speak about education or current education and curriculums because I'm not teaching myself. So I'm not familiar about the exact subjects they are teaching, but I would say what I definitely know what was part of the education in Soviet system, that they would study a lot like historically, you know, like chronologically, how architecture came to this or that point. And I hope very much that also currently the historical chronology of the education, of our architectural education, does not stop with 20s or 30s or Stalinist architecture of the previous century, but it continues. And not only, I know several persons who teach that period at, for example, like private universities, also like free university, but I'm not sure this is also the fact at the Art Academy or, so I don't really want to blame anybody or name anybody in particular, but I wish it would be the case. So maybe it is also the case, but for me, this is very important part of the education, and not only of Soviet, but also of international, because what I just mentioned, right? Because they go hand in hand, they go in parallel, and exactly to see this, that buildings and the legacy we have from Soviet period architecture is not less important than the international architecture of the same period.
So what is the process like? I know there's a difference. I know in the US there's like architects and there's engineers, you know, there's a division that seems to be sort of contentious part, because engineers are valued less than architects in a sense of like who's the sort of the aesthetic part, you know. Was there a I know because Soviet Union also tried to constantly overcome the mental and labor division as an ideological component. Was there anything like that in architecture that we can sort of point to where there was an attempt to overcome such divisions?
Well, yes. Also in Soviet period architecture, we rarely see structural engineers mentioned. So all the books, like from that period, all the publications, Jay just named the architects. So they are the front face or the representatives of this or that building, which is, of course, not, I mean, I consider it's not proper, properly and correct, because as I mentioned also with the sports palace, right, and also with other buildings, the role of the structural engineers is very, very strong and immense in that case. And also the construction of a building is a collaborative process, right? So there are architects involved, there are co-architects involved. It's also very often that the co-architects are not really mentioned in the process, and there are many people who, I mean, of course, one thing is the appearance of the building, which might be the authorship goes to the architect, but there are people who think about the further elaboration, distribution, execution of that idea, right? So, and these are the co-architects, which are sometimes also not really mentioned, and the structural engineers, and there are urbanists, there are, I don't know, there are technicians, there are, I don't know, I mean, like people who are responsible for acoustics, or people who are responsible for, I don't know, like many, many different other. And for us, like current researchers, I would say it's very important to dig out the names of these people. And this is possible by researching in the first orders, in the commission orders, and original plans, because original drawings of the plans, they always have at least of the chief architect, of the co-author, and of the structural engineer written on the plans. Yeah. And what is also very interesting, I mean, this is not maybe like the exact like directly continuation of this, but somehow the Soviet system, they never named the architects with the full name. So there was always this, like for the first name, they wrote initials, like the first letter, and then the surname. And it is so difficult currently to find out the real names of these people, you know? I don't know why the system was, what was the logic behind the system? But whenever I work on a publication in these days, I always try to name them with the full names, for at least the future generation can know who were these architects.
You know, in a sort of interesting thing, since I moved back to Georgia the past 8 years now, I used to live in the US, has been how, you know, the dialogue around new development and how sort of anti-human they are in this, the way they engineer, the way they structure it, from, you know, the balconies to how much space to sunlight, so on and so on. And what's interesting is a lot of people, like sort of movements, like often led by also or included architects, Georgian architects, been saying that the Soviet Union had much better regulations and they're much more sort of pro-human, as in like making sure they get enough sunlight and enough space. So how was that also, maybe you can discuss that, and how was that maybe reflected in the architecture?
Well, it was definitely, I mean, we can definitely argue if the Soviet system was good or bad, but the regulations back then regarding like the human conditions, or taking into account like human living space and environment, it was much more regulated. I mean, the much hated also microrayons, for example, right? I mean, look at Dihomi, look at Nutsubidze, look at all these microrayons. We have the distance between the buildings, the distribution of them, geographical distribution, the green areas which were planted, it is much more human, which we definitely don't have currently, like exactly what you mentioned. Yeah, like one building faces the next, right? And you can directly watch into your neighbor's apartment. So you have no sunlight, you have no balconies, or if you have a balcony, you can't really use this balcony because you have everybody looking into your balcony. There is no green space for kids to play. Also from the Soviet period, like the all these green areas or the yards, we have turned into these concrete gardens full of garages and so on and so forth. And even currently, I mean, I also live in this huge Soviet apartment block, and in my my yard is full of garages which the tenants don't use anymore. They are all too lazy to unlock and lock daily and several times per day to put the car in, to park the car in the garage. So they park outside. So this is again twice as much space as they are taking over in the yard. So I mean, we are really living in a catastrophic conditions. But there is no real discussion about it, and people don't talk about it because nobody really, because we have, I don't know if this communal thinking about your neighbor and next person was much better. Was it enforced in Soviet period? Was it like must, or people were much more collaborative? I don't know, but what I definitely can observe currently that we have lost this sense. So everybody becomes so individualistic. Nobody thinks about the common space, the communal space, the, I don't know, to make our living environment, our yards to be used by everybody or to be shared. Like sharing is absolutely, I think we have lost this word in our vocabulary. So yeah, in that terms, it was much better regulated in the Soviet period.
Honestly, when I first saw the elevators, when you have to put the money, I could not believe it. I was like, this cannot be real.
Yeah, people still cannot believe it. Yeah, but this is, I mean, this is the sad reality, because in my house, there is also this coin system, because otherwise, imagine 16 floors, almost like 30 to 40 apartments in one this entrance, like the block, and half of them, they would, if like for the maintenance of this elevator, half of the dwellers would contribute. And then the system, they came upon with this system. So if you voluntarily don't want to contribute to it, then we force you to do it. So I mean, which is not a nice way, but there is no other way. So, yes.
You know, it's interesting with Meskhishvili. He, you know, he met, you know, Tsaldubo Imereti, what's it called, sanatoria, the Agrarian Institute, metro station, like the things he has built, like none of those things we really need anymore. Like the new architecture that comes in, it's not a tribute to the people or to it's public transportation or something kind of public good, but the only things that seem to be being built are residential buildings and restaurants, right? Like the need for someone like Meskhishvili is no longer here. Like he couldn't exist today because his works would not have need for it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like very, very tragic.
Yeah, very interesting observation. Yeah, right. I mean, we can also talk or, yeah, have, I don't know, like speculate or why was it so? So, of course, it was like during the Soviet times, those facilities were not existing, right? So all these public buildings or the infrastructure, so they were contributing to it. Whereas today we have this all and we don't even have the need in them, right? So the libraries, the huge libraries, the huge concert halls, we cannot maintain them. So this is also the sad reality that look at the concert hall in Tbilisi, the former Philharmonic. So the scale of the building, like we cannot maintain it on the daily basis. So that's why, and even though the building has a monument status, we I mean, we, I say just we, but so the state has, or the current owners have turned the upper floor into a gym. Imagine. And the lower floor, the part of it is a real estate agency. So, I mean, this is catastrophe, what is happening. The Tbilisi Chess Palace and Alpine Club, I mean, we have managed to give it a monument status 3 years ago, and part of the building, this beautiful building, is rented out to restaurants, to billiard club, to, I don't know, like small little entities, which of course, I mean, with all these separations and divisions, we lose the original idea of the building and original appearance of the building. But we definitely have to start thinking much more intensively about the adaptation of the buildings, because there is also this one very important subject which come into play that there is no discussion about it in Georgia. I mean, in Western countries, they already started about the ecology issues, right? Because demolishing of these buildings, it's much more nature invasive than keeping them and adapting them to new uses. But we really don't want to talk about it. We really don't want to know anything about it. We are much more comfortable, I don't know why, demolishing them and bringing up new fancy glass structures, which happened, for example, really, really good example for it is the former shopping mall and, I mean, this complex of shopping mall and Freedom Square metro station, right? There was this amazing building, which firstly, I don't know why we could not maintain the shopping mall. I mean, we need it, right? The shopping mall. Okay, there was no need. Somehow there was no need. For years, it was abandoned. There was there were several suggestions to the city hall that they would turn it into a contemporary art gallery or museum, because we don't have such. We still don't have such a museum. And it was really suitable because it's in the vicinity of the National Museum, National Gallery, and all the galleries. So it could have created this kind of museum's island. But we never thought about it. And then we demolished it and put up a new fancy shopping mall. So, yeah. So maybe we should definitely have this shift in our minds and start thinking in a different way. So start, unfortunately, we did not learn much from COVID and from all the nature catastrophes happening around us. So we are still stubbornly continuing with our neoliberal economy and
I think the response of destroying everything that Georgia had, other places too, but I think it was also extreme here, without thinking about the future, very short term, also sort of maybe, you know, vindictive in some ways, trying to get rid as fast as possible, but without offering anything really in return, has been really quite horrible for Georgia. And so many things now are abandoned still or completely repurposed as only for paid spaces, you know, where you have to pay something to even be there, you know, hotel or cafe or something. And it's like this sort of lacking of free spaces.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's even like very recent past. I mean, if we look at the architectural remnants from Saakashvili period, again, I don't want to talk about good or bad or was it proper or not proper, but the parliament in Kutaisi, these concert halls or like this cultural halls on in Rige Park, President's Palace. I mean, millions, billions we have spent, like taxpayers' money went into it. And the new government comes and with this impulsive decision, like emotionally, as I say, we don't want to have anything to do with these buildings. So we abandon them and we move into other buildings. And then again, we have to pay for maintenance of like double for two presidents' palaces, for two parliaments' buildings, for, I mean, this is insane.
It's definitely insane. It would be good to actually respect the previous, the some levels, previous, past, and then move on and add on and not just completely reject every single time.
We should start talking about it. I mean, this is what we don't do. We don't talk about these problems. I mean, we just prefer to erase them, just to cut off, erase, demolish, abandon, as if this problem goes away. So we don't really like to talk about things.
Yeah, that's actually why one of the reasons we created this podcast was to force some, at least maybe not everyone's talking about it, but to have these different discussions in hopes that it would lead to bigger discussions about especially Soviet Georgian legacy and being able to take the good as well as the bad and not just reduce it down to only repressions of 1930s. That's it. And then nothing else came ever. So yeah, definitely. We've been attempting to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely, I mean, very good initiative. And yeah, thank you also so much for inviting me and all the other people and bringing up these topics, because this is basically why we all work in our own fields, right? I mean, me creating publications or exhibitions, you creating podcasts, and this giving platform for this dialogue is, well, we have all the same goal. So to contribute slightly, maybe to a better future and living environment.
What is the state of kind of like discussions about Soviet architecture in Georgia today? Because I don't think we really covered that. Like, and why is it in the state that it's in? Because the reason I ask this is because I see a lot of people who are, you know, discuss things like, you know, the need to preserve 19th century buildings, you know, in the old city, for example, restoration of these very, very old buildings. And around these initiatives, you get conversations kind of about, you know, old buildings that need to be preserved or saved. But I very rarely hear anybody having any conversation about Soviet era buildings, their significance, their meaning. And so kind of maybe to dovetail onto what you just said, what is the state of the conversation in Georgia today about Soviet era architecture?
Well, I guess the reason for it is the time period. So the gap between the Soviet period and we are living, it's still very short. So we really need to take distance from this period. And this is unfortunately or unfortunately, I don't know, it's not only post-Soviet countries' problem. The same problem exists in the in Germany with the socialist legacy. The same problem exists in many other countries with that period, let's say, with that period legacy. There are also examples in Scandinavia and so forth where they want to demolish this period architecture. So I guess the reason is that we still need some distance to take from this period so that we start appreciating and seeing it in a different angle, because we still associate it with the political system we don't wanna have to do anything with anymore. And luckily, I see that there is more and more interest. It's still very little in order to rescue everything, but it's becoming more and more. Also in Georgia, for example, there are many more tourists interested in this subject. There are many more younger generation locally interested in this subject. For example, when I researched on Soviet period mosaics, I got several requests over the years to support them in writing their semester or graduation work, you know, like their or doctoral thesis or whatever. So and this the same happens also with the architecture. For example, Tbilisi Architectural Biennial also in very good way contributes to it. So they are involving lots of students who research on this period architecture. So there is definitely much more interest, and I hope it will become even more and grow rapidly so that we still can manage to save the majority of the legacy we have.
Tbilisi var, Tbilisi gavçindi. Miyamaqeba var bedmieri, chemo Tbiliso, chemo Lamazo. Gamshenebs tebi galagebs mtkvari. Ise miqvar khar versad ver gavzle, ushenot guli mekneba mgudari, ushenot guli mekneba mgudari. Se mi guar harver sadver gauzle bushenot guli mekneva mkudari kushenot guli mekneva mkudari tertari sva gar moqurisi meti minda gimghero shezed viloso meore deda chemom shobelo sursro mesheni kuchebi vots მეორე დედა ჩემომშობელო სურს რომ შენი ქუჩები გოცნო.